This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for January 7th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the FDA has released two new public safety rules for public comment. We'll have that and other stories. And Todd Gleason will look at the demand side of the corn market with University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Here are your settlements for this Monday afternoon from Chicago and Kansas City. In Kansas City, March wheat, 807.5 up 3, July 821.75 up 4. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 751.25 up 4, July 767.75 up 4.5. March corn, 685.5 up 5.25, July 678.5 up 3.75, December at 574.5 up 2.75. January soybeans, 1410.75 up 21.75, March 1388.5 up 21.25, July 1373.5 up 18.5, November 1284.75 up 7.75. January soybean meal 408.50 up 10.30, March 408.90 up 9.90, January soybean oil 49.50 up 8 cents, March 49.96 up 6. February live cattle 132.97.5 up 2.5, January feeder cattle 153.37.5 up 20, and February lean hogs at 86.42.5, and they are up 20.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Taking a look at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says today's forecast has not changed greatly, with most areas in Brazil getting rain often enough to maintain or, in some cases, improve soil moisture. Crop conditions are expected to remain in mostly good shape. The exception will remain in northeastern Brazil, where crops have not seen much rain recently and where crop stress is becoming more of an issue in some cases. Some rain will fall in the driest areas in the next 2 weeks, although it will not probably be enough to counter evaporation very often. A drier bias will be in place for most of Argentina for at least a week. The entire period and all locations will not be completely dry, but the few showers and thunderstorms that occur will fail to produce enough rain to seriously counter evaporation, leading to the conclusion that most areas will dry down during the week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at our agricultural futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon there, Dave.
It was a very interesting day for the soybean market. We started off fairly strong, and at one point in the day, we gave back almost all of the gains. And then at the end of the day, we finished on the highs and actually extended the gains that we saw in the open outcry.
Yeah, what a roller coaster. And I think that's a sign, you know, the markets, you know, we've been in, and it's going to be that way for, you know, some time. But early selling, you know, just failure to see some buyers come forward here, liquidation. And as we started the 9:30 trade, traditionally there, we saw a little bit more enthusiasm once we got through the export inspection. So showed that we shipped out almost 40 million bushel, gave the trade a little bit more confidence. And there's some talk we'll see some Asian business here as we go through the week. When you look at Asia, China particularly, crush margins, they're quite profitable. So there's some ideas that they'll be back into the marketplace here when they can pencil out some fairly good returns buying U.S. beans, shipping them and crushing them and putting them in their pipeline in their country. Also, too, we saw, you know, some little drier forecast in the southern hemisphere. It's probably not enough to go sharply higher, but enough to give the market a little pause in here if the idea of a little business coming our way, a little weather uncertainty in the southern hemisphere. With the technical picture oversold, momentum indicators trying to turn up, it sort of alleviated the selling pressure and allowed the market to drift higher. Also, too, we started to see a good chunk of the rebalancing of some of these portfolios, and soybean meal had a real strong today also.
Yeah, the January was up $10.30 on the close today. How come, as a ratio, of the increase that we saw today, corn didn't do its typical, you know, 2-to-1 kind of thing with the beans?
Well, this is going to go from commodity to commodity. I think the emphasis was a little bit on the bean sector here. Corn news just kind of lacks. I know we did sell 102,000 tons of corn to unknown destination, but, you know, export inspections, we only shipped out 7 million bushels of corn. I know we're looking at holiday type of movement, and that will get better here as we go through the next couple of weeks. But corn's just boring, you know. Nobody really wants to step forward and put on a corn position. A lot of the corn trade has been spread, led. Speculative interest is left to go to some other commodities. You know, like I mentioned before, you know, a lot more interest in buying guns versus corn. And I think it's a situation where we need to see the exports pick up here a little bit. And also, too, when we look at the overall world supply-demand balance sheet here, you know, we saw some competitiveness come in, such as feed wheat. So I think it's going to be probably more important to watch the corn and wheat market together versus the beans. I think you're going to see buying beans, selling corn, wheat. Buying beans, selling the corn and the wheat, then vice versa, buying the wheat and corn and selling the beans on the spread.
We do have those bevy of reports out on Friday. When all the dust clears, what will the trade make of them?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, you expect no real big news, you'll get it. And you expect something big, you won't. I think it's, you know, a juggling effect here of massaging the numbers somewhat. You know, the corn's got a lot of room to do nothing. What I mean by that is you can lower harvested acres by 1, maybe even 1.5 million acres, but they're going to come back and raise yield a little bit. Then, too, the demand side, the miscellaneous category on feed demand, they've got some cushion there. But the bottom line is they're going to keep ending stocks relatively tight on corn, pipeline supplies. When you look at the bean sector, there's room to see the ending stocks increase just a tad bit. I don't know if we'll see a whole lot of change in the world numbers, such as the southern hemisphere on beans, but we'll let the market digest it. You know, it seemed more of a little calmer atmosphere than what we've seen from last summer, where we saw some strong, almost limit moves. We've got to remember, we saw the reports start trading or come out during the trade.
Right.
And what we saw was these so-called black boxes reading the headlines. And what they did is they would read yield, you know, yield real low, and boom, off they go, buy, 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 buy. But the next headline would say, well, carry out a little higher, and then sell, sell, sell. And I think they've got those systems a little bit more fine-tuned than they did this summer. They've got a little bit more filters in there. So I think the volatile trade that we've seen in the past from these crop reports coming out has been going to be a little bit more managed than what it was last summer.
Does it change at all, though, that it is at 11 a.m. When the reports are released and you have a compressed time between 11 and the markets close at 2?
Well, that's a good question. It might put a little bit more urgency to get your business done in a little bit of a shorter trading period. I would say if there is a surprise, it could make a little bit more volatile. At this point in time, I think everybody's pretty well where they want to be. We've seen the funds exit. They'll probably continue to exit. The end user's fairly well covered here. You talk to actual buyers, they're pretty well comfortable right now. So it would take some pretty good news in here to get the market excited either way.
Well, I do know in the 5 of the last 6 years, I think we had a limit move in corn.
Well, anything can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, just when you think something's not going to happen, it will. It's anything's possible. That's why one should have some type of plan going into these reports. You know, have, you know, some orders to sell, limit up if you need to sell, or if you're short and got a hedge on, you know, have a little call protection or something, kind of manage the position and don't get spooked out. Because when you have these limit moves and volatile moves, it makes it a little bit more stressful and hectic, and I've seen a lot of guys get out at the extremes, whereas they had a covered position or try to manage that position a little bit more, it turns out a little bit better in the long run.
Before we let you go, talk a little bit about the December 13 corn contract and what you would do from a hedging standpoint with that kind of a number.
Well, I was sold on the high, which it would be kind of tough to do when we were back there at those levels, from the point that, you know, everybody thought we could go a little higher.
Mm-hmm.
But from a producer hedge point of view, we've got a hook reversal today. If we keep building the momentum here, we should be able to get a 50% retracement from this down move we saw from first part of December until today, which would put the market in a position to see these 13 futures get back to this 608, 610 level. And as producer at that point, I would look at that as a short-term goal that's obtainable and use that as a benchmark to get some marketing in place for this 2013 corn production day.
Thank you, Kurt. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, the Food and Drug Administration has proposed two new food safety rules intended to carry out key provisions of the Food Safety Modernization Act. The first proposed rule would require makers of food to be sold in the U.S., whether produced at a foreign or domestic-based facility, to develop a formal plan for preventing their food products from causing foodborne illnesses. The rule would also require them to have plans for correcting any problems that arise. The second proposed rule would set enforceable safety standards for the production and harvesting of produce on farms. It would require that larger produce farms be in compliance with most of the proposed safety requirements 26 months after the final rule is published in the Federal Register. small and very small farms would have additional time to comply. There are serious questions about whether there will be adequate funding available to enforce the proposed rules. The Congressional Budget Office estimates FDA would need about $1.5 billion in additional funds over 5 years to do so. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow says that she will proceed with a new farm bill and not wait for the House Agriculture Committee to act first. Stabenow also says that she supports House Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Colin Peterson, a Democrat from Minnesota, in his decision not to participate in a markup until House Speaker John Boehner, a Republican from Ohio, and House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, a Republican from Virginia, agree to bring up the bill to the House floor. A slowdown in fertilizer shipments to Asia weighed on Mosaic Company's fiscal second quarter earnings. The Minnesota-based fertilizer company reported second quarter operating earnings fell 30%. In the latest period, phosphate net sales, the company's biggest source of revenue, were down 19% at $1.8 billion as sales shrank about 6.3%. Net sales in the potash segment fell 7% to $780 million as volumes sank about 17%. The company slashed its global potash shipment forecast to 55 to 57 million tons for 2013, down from a prior forecast of 58 to 60 million, and it cut its phosphate shipment forecast to 63 to 65 million tons, down from its previous forecast of 64 to 66 million metric tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Last fall, the marketplace was wondering how the short corn crop might eventually be rationed. As Todd Gleason reports, there are some answers to that question today.
Certainly, the beef cattle producers of this nation have had a tough time coping with drought. Their misery started not with the historic drought of 2012 that caused feed supplies like corn to disappear, but rather in 2011 when Texas emptied its parched pastures of animals. So we'll chalk up livestock as one of the places most heavily impacted by lack of corn produced last summer. The other, apparently, is the export market. The United States, year in and year out, the world's number one supplier of corn, just isn't selling anything overseas. Here's University of Illinois Ag economist Daryl Good.
I mean, there's hardly any adjectives to describe the corn export market at this point. We're not selling anything. We're not shipping anything. First quarter exports for the marketing year, by my calculations, we're at a 41-year low, and we haven't seen any improvement in the month of December. I think potentially USDA is going to be forced to lower its projection for the year at some point. I mean, we're still optimistic that this really anemic rate will pick up at some point, but the further we go into the marketing year, the more ground we have to make up. And at some juncture, we just say, unless some other part of the world runs into trouble production-wise, we're going to have some difficulty.
Generally, the export market for U.S. corn is very stable and right on mark with USDA's beginning of the marketing year projection. 2012-13, says Good, may go down as one outside the normal deviation.
I mean, we look at all of our major buyers of corn, and historically the most stable market is Japan, but South Korea, Taiwan, Mexico are the big markets for corn. And what we've seen for the most part is that U.S. corn has been priced out of that market to some extent so far this year. We have to recall that while the Argentine harvest earlier this year was quite small, Brazil actually had a very large corn crop and have been exporting large quantities of corn that has been competing with the U.S. U.S. corn has been higher priced. The Black Sea region has been very aggressive exporting wheat, providing a lot of competition for corn. So I think it's the drought, the small supplies, the high price of U.S. corn, and the world has just looked to other alternatives. And the argument has been, well, at some point, the supplies of those alternatives are depleted, and then the world comes back to the U.S. And that's kind of built into the USDA's forecast, that even though their forecast is pretty low for the year, it implies a pretty rapid pickup from where we are right now. And so we'll have to see whether that happens or not. The longer we go without that happening, the more worrisome it is.
Worrisome because the drought has allowed a new competitor access to the corn export market. A decade ago, Brazil was not a major soybean-producing nation. Today, it is because it had a competitive advantage in its southern hemisphere growing season. It will be interesting to see if farmers there can seize a similar opportunity for corn, or if the United States will simply bury it with next fall's harvest. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Amy Murray of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Amy.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Quiet phones, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Saw a little green on the screen today, so that's positive. And guys kind of hold it out for the report on Friday, so not too busy on the phones today.
Were they asking much about basis plays?
A little bit, but for the most part, people just kind of in anticipation for what the USDA supply-demand numbers are going to be, which would reflect both the futures and the basis market.
And do the Andersons have a position on what they think Friday's numbers are going to be?
You know, I think we're hoping for a reduction in the United States production, particularly in corn. I think we really need to see harvested acres lowered significantly from where they're at, and especially compared to what Informa came out with. I think that we think that it should be a little bit lower than where they're at. So,
as a commercial, how much as a percentage of corn do you hold this time of year as compared to a more regular year where a crop is more normal in terms of its production?
Sure. Well, there's a couple different factors that go into that, and I would say we're a little bit less than a typical year. Part of that due to the inverted market, but also part due to conditions. We're dealing with an aflatoxin problem this year out in the country, and so obviously risk of condition is a much bigger player this year than in typical years.
Why don't you go through your bevy of prices then for us, please?
You bet. Cash corn today's at 7.02, February 7.08, March 7.10, July 7.08. New crop fall of 13's at 5.54 across the scale, with January 14 at 5.64. Cash beans today 14.07, February and March 13.98, July 13.81. New crop 13 is at 12.60, January 14 beans at 12.72. Cash wheat, 7.23, and new crop July is at 7.48.
Thank you much, Amy.
Thank you.
That's Amy Murray of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. And I will be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. It's National Tempura Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1608, a fire destroyed Jamestown, Virginia, leaving colonists little protection from the winter elements. Later that year, a severe drought, what became known as the Starving Time, killed 154 of the colony's 214 people. In 1784, the first U.S. seed business was established by David Landreth in Philadelphia. In 1827, Sir Sanford Fleming was born, a Scottish surveyor. While in charge of the initial survey for the Canadian Pacific Railroad, the first Canadian railway to span the continent, he realized the problems of coordinating such a long railway. that led him to the idea of time zones, which led to the adoption of the present system of time zones and earned him the title of Father of Standard Time. In 1830, the Maryland-based Baltimore and Ohio Railway, one of the oldest railroads in the U.S., officially began service. On that first day of operation, the passengers were not transported by a locomotive, but rather pulled by horse-drawn carts on the new track. In 1958, Ant Farms went on sale for the first time. And in 1970, Max Gasker, whose farm in upstate New York played host to the original Woodstock Festival, was sued for $35,000 in property damages by neighboring farmers. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I keep hammering on this issue, but it just is what it is, and that is, for the most part, Brazil continues to have good weather.
Boy, that's right. It really is. You know, I think it's important to keep everybody pointed in the right direction. It's easy to get hung up on the fact that the Northeast has been so dry for so many weeks, but that Northeast doesn't produce much of any in the way of soybeans, not enough to have an impact on the bottom line market move. So we're kind of left in a position here where we have to make that comment. Conditions are just about perfect in Brazil. There is a very serious problem with dryness in the Northeast, and to be honest with you, it's going to stay there. So we're going to hear about maybe the coffee crop being hurt or maybe a little bit of sugar cane or something like that. But when it comes to the soybeans, the only thing we're going to hear about is jingle in the Brazilian farmers' pockets probably, because it's going to be a very large crop. And they are beginning to harvest some of that. I don't know if you do that or not, but some of the first fields are being harvested up in the north. We're a long ways away from the main harvest season, but anyway, that's the direction we're moving in, and they are going to see continued showers and thunderstorms on a pretty regular basis there all the way through these next few weeks.
So if anything, USDA on later WASDE reports might even be bumping their production even higher, if you can imagine that.
Yeah, that's a strong possibility.
What about Argentina?
Argentina is switching gears a little bit here. You know, they've been in a wetter mode for about 5 months. At least in parts of the country, and they have put an end to that, at least for right now. They are going to be seeing a full week's worth of dry weather, and temperatures will get rather warm. We'll probably be looking at temperatures in the 90s, perhaps over 100 degrees in a portion of Argentina's crop country. But after 5 months of rather cool and wet conditions, well, I won't say cool, but after all this period of wet weather, a period of dry and warm conditions could only help that crop. And the Vegetative Health Index continues to suggest the majority of Argentina's grain and oil seeds are in very good shape, even though we had a hard time getting some of them in the ground on time. So we may lose a little yield for the early corn crop, but the soybeans are looking very good there.
And I suppose the other area we ought to touch on today continues to be the western part of the Corn Belt.
Absolutely, and it does look like a no-change scenario for the most part. Now, we've got a storm system that's going to be brewing here on Wednesday, actually tomorrow, in the southern plains down in Texas. It will sit down there for about a day and a half and get all juiced up, and then it will start racing to the northeast, and we'll actually reach the upper Midwest as we get into the second half of this week. But as it comes northward, it's going to weaken very quickly. So we'll have a little bit of rain and snow up that way, but it's not going to be a drought buster. And we're still looking at a longer-range outlook that downplays precipitation in the upper Midwest on a pretty significant basis for at least another few weeks. So we'll get there, maybe, do a little bit better late winter, early spring. But for the next few weeks, I don't think we're going to see much change.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.